This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ouais, ça sort bien.
Joué.
Elle est servie. Le latéral gauche, un petit angle de centre est bien couvert à la part... Bellerin. Zelich pour Barclay.
Oh oui.
Oh oui, la passe cachée avec le ballon.
Oui.
Très bon pour la target.
Oh,
et c'est facile, ne sera probablement pas refusé. Et c'est très aigué.
Fuck off. Bullshit.
Look how simple they scored that goal. Honestly, man.
Bellerin, who do you think?
Oh,
fucking Bellerin. They're all shit. Fucking all of them, Bellerin, fucking holding, all of them. Load of fucking. Look! Getting bullied! Getting bullied! Fuck off!
There's fucking people that turn around and say that fucking Grealish ain't good enough to for Arsenal. People
I said Grealish. He ain't good enough for Arsenal.
People are mad, I said. Greenish, fucking Greenish, I've been saying get Greenish last season, he ain't worth it, he ain't good enough for Arsenal, he's fucking run all over us there.
Embarrassing, fucking Watkins was bullying us in the first half, bullshit, fucking crap. Absolute shit, tactics were fucking wank,
the players are fucking wank.
Useless fucking piles of fucking shit. Fucking Willian, all of them. Fuck off. Bullshit.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast, your essential Villa listen during the second lockdown. Joining me to discuss Villa's latest win. To continue their 100% record away from home, their 3-0 mullering of Arsenal, Mr. Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground, welcome back. The elusive Mr. Dan Rogers.
Hello, I'm here. It is good to be on the soon-to-be Champions Tour podcast.
Mr. Chris Bird, welcome back.
Hello.
And Mr. Phil Shaw, welcome.
Hello.
Well, coming up, we will obviously talk about what was... I mean, people are saying it was a more complete performance than even the Liverpool game when we hammered them 7-2. But we'll get onto that later on. First of all, how are you gentlemen doing in the second lockdown? How's life in Northern Ireland, first of all?
It's pretty much we're a couple of weeks ahead of you, so I've got a sort of a vision of where
what happens in the future.
Where you're going.
What happens? Tell us. What happens at Christmas?
Everybody argues and goes to each other's houses anyway.
Yeah, I thought so.
But I'm most concerned about barbers. What's the hair situation, Phil?
Oh, the hair situation isn't great. I mean, if you've seen Pochettino on Sky Sports, I mean, I'm currently sporting a Pochettino.
Luscious.
Mr. Rogers, tuning out after Villa took another beating, but back again for a bit of glory hunting.
Well, you know, you should come to expect it from the Villa Underground that I do have to go into my bunker when we lose to Southampton.
He's trying to say something smutty. That's what he's trying to do.
I'll leave that to the Guardian columnist, but we'll get to that in a bit.
And Bud, everything okay for you? I think
not
you mentioned
too bad.
Last time.
I finally got my audio interface back on Friday after 4 weeks of not being able to make music. So it's game on.
And just to be clear for new listeners, he's not like Stephen Hawking. He doesn't need that so he can communicate to the outside world. It's
yeah. Anyway. Before we crack on with the show, you know, on TV news programmes. They have tomorrow's newspapers today. We thought we would... Who noticed this, by the way? Who was it?
This was Phil.
Yeah, Phil noticed... I think he read the Guardian's match report of the Villa-Arsenal game. I think you flagged this up in Match Club, didn't you? So we thought we'd just go back just to... as a little... we used to do a Villa week in a Villa minute, so Chris can read out some of the highlights of this Guardian review. Who was it by?
Jonathan Liu.
Oh yeah, Jonathan Liu. I think I sat next to him during the Football Supporters Association Awards 1 year. Nice guy, actually. But anyway, here's some of the snippets of his match report.
For a while, it felt like Aston Villa might have to settle in for a long and painful rear guard, at which point they seemed to come to a crucial realisation. They were better than Arsenal. And so, in a rampant, crushing climax, they set about proving it.
Oof, carry on, Chris.
Carry on.
As Jack Grealish and Ross Barkley began to run the game on strings, as Ollie Watkins picked off the two goals that would turn victory into a rout, Arsenal were stripped bare again and again. Beaten, not just on tactics and technique,
beat me,
but on application.
Rubbing
Villa in. Won their duels and won their second balls, leaving Arsenal choking in the dust. Again, it sprang from Grealish and Barkley, teasing the ball between themselves on the left wing. Unrushed and unconfronted, waiting for an opening to emerge.
Slide it in.
On the touchline, you could sense Arteta's sap beginning to rise.
Well, we can't
see you guys in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we're done.
Absolute smut.
Did he have Pornhub open on his laptop?
It's 50 Shades
of Grealish.
Writing
this? It is, isn't
50
it?
50 Shades
Absolute.
Of Grealish.
Jonathan, you're so smutty.
Never knew the Guardian was top shelf.
It's a tsunami of filth.
This is what Dean Smith's revolution is creating. It needs to be censored.
This is the epitome of sexy football, isn't it?
Anyway, moving on with the show. Coming up, we will get into the Villa news and what's happening as the international break once more emerges, including Aston Villa's ladies' first win. 3 points, with another look at familiar topics. Pay-per-view, there's been an advancement on that. Marcus Rashford's showing you what you can do as a footballer when you have such a platform. And also, the handball rule might be... getting a reconsideration. I think it's just had one, didn't it, at the start of the season. And then we'll get into the main topic, that's sexy football. The 3-0 win that rose Arteta's sap. And then we will finish off the show with a little underrated or overrated with Mr. Darius Vassell. Right, let's get into the Villa news. First up, it's the start of the international week, which now it's basically now just a time for Villa fans to go mad at Gareth Southgate on social media, essentially. That's what it's boiled down to into the international break. Do you think Grealish will get a run?
I think we play three games, don't we? So it'll definitely get a start one of them, I'd imagine.
He'll get a game in the middle one, the friendly. Playing Ireland in the middle one, my near neighbours.
Grealish will get the run out against Ireland, won't he?
Just to say to Ireland, this is what you could have had.
Just for giggles, really. I think the man who's got the most at stake is probably John McGinn, who, he's basically, we're paying his wages now to play for Scotland, aren't we? Because... he's never 100% fresh for Villa once he's come back from 3 games and 2 weeks with the Scots.
Well, he plays every minute of every game as well, doesn't he?
And, you know, they're always kind of chasing. It's not easy work playing for Scotland as well, the way they have to set up. So it is pretty exerting on him. Horahan's playing dead rubber stuff. I mean, it'd be a thrill for him to play against England. But, you know, fortunately, when I say thrill, there's none of these games really are experiences if there's no crowd there, really. It's a bit of a strange one how you would memorize. It's like, wow, I remember playing for Ireland versus England. You know, what a great occasion. It's like, well, it's another empty stadium. It's a bit strange. Meanwhile, Douglas Luiz will be off. He's in Brazil, are in World Cup qualifiers at the moment, are they not?
Yes.
Yeah. They are. And he's got a couple of tough games. Even though Brazil are top of the group and you would say cruising, first game's against Venezuela if he gets on, and they're sort of the up-and-coming South American nation. Yeah. And then... a real sort of blood and thunder against Uruguay.
All right, yeah, always good for the blood and thunder.
He likes to tackle in the midfield, so he'll be right up for that one.
And then Emi Martinez could make his debut for Argentina in one of their games.
Any other international teams with much to play for?
Yeah, I mean, what do you mean? Why didn't you lead with Northern Ireland? I mean, we not only have a qualifier, we have a qualifier with a crowd in the ground. And
Stephen Davis this, Stephen Davis that.
Yeah, so we're letting fans in and
how
ignore no COVID.
Oh, no, you're in the future. Sorry, I forgot you were in the future.
Yeah, we're in the future, yeah. So ignore no COVID restrictions. The club, Linfield, that own the National Stadium, we'll get into that maybe some other time. They've got a hold of a few tickets and they've decided to run a competition for them, completely ignoring all COVID rules.
The future
sounds a bit Willy Wonka, to be honest.
You clearly haven't been here in a while.
Yeah, well, I have, and that sounds perfectly normal to me.
All right, well, good luck. Sorry, who's Northern Ireland playing in the
playoffs? We're playing Slovakia, who sacked their manager after qualifying the playoffs.
Ooh.
I'll put this to Dan and Chris very quickly. Who's most likely to get through their qualifier, Scotland or Northern Ireland? Scotland versus Serbia, Northern Ireland versus Slovakia.
I'd say Northern Ireland, probably.
I would too. The Scots are a one-man team for me.
Yeah.
I'd throw that out there.
I'd say they're a two-man team, but two men a team doth not make.
Can I say Scotland?
Didn't ask
Hang
you.
On, what do you know? You're in the future, after
all. Right, moving on. Villa's ladies came back from their COVID isolation to chalk up their first win and first points when they won 2-0 away to Brighton, which I think that puts them 10th now. The way the league's structured, there's 12 teams in the league, one relegation spot, which is currently filled by Bristol City's women, and then it's Spurs, then Villa. Villa women have played a couple of games less than most teams, and up next is the local derby against Birmingham City, so signs of progress there.
Well, looking at the league table, that win could be enough to keep them up, because I'm looking at the goal difference for Bristol City.
Yeah. Minus 26. Yeah, it did catch my eye as well.
After five games.
Yeah, I think that's probably Super League status secured for another season, actually, that win.
Well done.
Meanwhile, a new addition to Villa's backroom team, Nick Haycott, who I think he's been in coaching for about 25 years, but he's recently been working at the Premier League, and he'll join Villa as like the head of technical and player development. So I think we're talking more, that's like under 23s, under 18s, etc., if I'm not mistaken. And he's worked since he left West Ham, where he was there for a while at West Ham, like a decade. He was at the Premier League as a club support manager, so he's kind of getting back on the front line. So we'll see what happens there. I mean, always on social media, oh, exciting times for the under-23s and youth team. But, you know, let's see what happens first. Putting a team together at the moment, so hopefully it's all going in the right direction. But we'll see at the end of this season anyway. Right, let's move on to the 3 points. First point, pay-per-view. This hasn't actually been decided yet, but it was kind of leaked out of the Premier League's meeting before the international. This was a meeting more to get a few views across, so that could be passed on to the broadcasters, and then they'll meet again the Premier League stakeholders, which is essentially the CEOs of the 20 teams, and then they'll discuss what to do. But it looks like the $14.95 embarrassment price point is out the window, so nothing's off the table from what I understand. But it doesn't mean that this pay-per-view is scrapped. It could be reduced in price, or we could have the situation, and you know, after meeting Christian Perslow last week, as I said in the last podcast, I don't think they're not being any, you know, them not screening these games is actually not off the table at the moment. So make sure you kick up a fuss in terms of wanting to see these games, because at the end of the day, broadcasters and clubs just want to defend their the broadcasting rights deals that they have, and you know that essentially that is the only reason we're playing elite football at this moment, just to fulfill those contracts. Anything to add? What do you think should happen?
I think it will lead ultimately towards the Premier League moving on to a streaming model like a Netflix or an Amazon Prime or something like that. That seems the logical way. I remember hearing Simon Jordan talking about it. And in terms of a global audience, it would mean the Premier League
would make... But not in the short term.
No, but Premier League would make far more money. £5 a game, maybe. You know, supposedly the numbers of people who are actually paying to watch these streams are minuscule. Is it actually going to stop that many people accessing it on online streams anyway? I doubt it. If people can actually access a high quality free stream, they might be much more likely to do it, especially for the games that aren't meant to be televised.
I mean, the only thing you need to do to discourage piracy is keep pumping Michael Owen's voice Stephen Manaman's voice, Richard Keys' face through the overseas channel piracy that seems to be prevalent. It's enough to make me want to pay 15 quid. But I don't understand why they haven't, you know, as a whole industry, it hasn't pivoted towards that Netflix model already, that they've missed a huge trick in. And I think it goes back to some of the points that were made when they first came out with this, that they've completely misjudged the tone of the times.
Yeah, agreed.
The fact that 15 quid is just bonkers, and it's not about getting a product for free. People, football fans have been paying through the nose for years in person.
For everything.
To watch football. Like, for everything.
For like every tickets, element. Stream, you know, strip shirts are outrageous now.
Yeah.
That went berserk in the 90s and just kept going up and up and up.
But I think as well that the Premier League needs to get its head around the fact that going forward, streaming is the way for most industries, but also that we could be out of stadiums at least till March, you know, probably till the end of the season.
March is the bottom line they're looking at the moment. That's what the government have advised the Premier League. You know, if they do, let's say, continue with it with a different price, I think they've missed the boat in terms of £10. If they started off with £10, people would have shrugged and said, yeah, all right, but now it's just an insult. £5, I think you might get people off, let's say, pirating streams.
Well, they've hemorrhaged goodwill, but I'm surprised they haven't come out with a model, you know, either eat as much if you like football model that's, I don't know, a high price point, if you like, where you can watch anything, or a club-by-club model where you only see the games for your team, you know, that could be pitched at a lower. I'm surprised they haven't worked that out yet.
No, I don't think anything's off the table, but, you know, that there is that possibility of having, as you say, like you pay for a pass for the month, like a season ticket, and that gets you can watch it on BT or Sky or whoever is actually screening that game. Anyway, let's move on to point number two. Mr. Marcus Rashford has caused a second government U-turn after his idea of schools holiday support was rejected. But after the game against Everton, he got a phone call from old Boris saying that they'd managed to put together a package. Are they spending about £400 million to support children and their families in England?
Yeah, it's a remarkable turnaround, really. And again, just similar to the other point, that it shows you that how out of touch and how out of sync with the tone of the times the government were, and until finally they've actually looked at it and they've made a huge £500 million commitment to funding meals for poverty-stricken families, really, and their children.
Was the 400 figure I just mentioned, is that the first initiative he did? Because I think the package of support is like, they've got a £170 million ring-fenced fund to be distributed through councils.
Yeah, so I think that the way that works is that there was, the government was standing behind, there was money through Universal Credit and through other local government grants from central government to pay for food before, but of course with what's been going on, councils have used that money for the crisis that we find ourselves in. And what this does is it puts £170 million exclusively for help with food bills, the essentials really for, as I say, the most vulnerable in our communities.
And isn't there a £16 million boost, or let's say ring-fenced amount for food banks as well?
Yes, £16 million just for food banks, which is remarkable, really. I mean, there's a big local element for us that, you know, Birmingham's got over 41% of children in the highest poverty rates. It's just remarkable, really. That's outside of London this year. It says a lot. I mean, some of the constituencies of Birmingham are amongst the most underprivileged and poor in the country. So that money's really important.
Politically, that just shows what can happen when people have ideas and are constructive with it, rather than just this binary bickering.
Absolutely.
Of left and right, blue and red, and it doesn't get anywhere. I mean, you know, the government is the government. You've just got to convince them to there's a better way, and at least, you know, they've proven, certainly in Marcus Rashford's case, to have been listening. But he's been smart as well.
Well, the response from, you know, at local level across the country really has been, you know, phenomenal. And you look at some of the work that football teams, which ultimately are, you know, real pillars of their community, have done, and the fan bases of those clubs, and people have really kind of mucked in. I always think it's one of those things that when it comes to charity, anything involving, you know, children going hungry is going to go straight to the top of the pile. You know, certainly morally, you know, in a Western developed country, no child should be going hungry. So the fact that a footballer can use his platform for good and bring about a really positive change quite quickly in the grand scheme of things, considering how long it normally takes government to act upon things. It's, you know, you take your hat off to Rashford, and actually I think it's a shame for him in a way that the fans aren't in the stadiums, because I think every single away stadium he walks into, he will get an amazing response.
Point number three, just quickly, UEFA President Alexander Seferin has asked FIFA to change the handball rule, saying the current interpretation has led to unfair decisions, which has caused growing frustration and discomfort in the sport. Same could be said about the offside rule as well, I would say. Mm. I'm sure Patrick Bamford would agree with that. Yes, football can be improved, but you'd think they'd have improved it by now in terms of, you know, getting the handball rule right, getting the offside rule right, fundamentals, you would say. VAR, you know, doesn't even need to enter the conversation at this stage, but it's just getting those basic rules right. The thing that VAR does on the offside is make it sacrosanct, and there's, you know, there's no grey areas. I think I said in Match Club, it's like, you know, the highway code for driving. There's so many different permutations as a driver, different signs, different types of roads. And by reading the highway code, you pretty much, you know what you should be doing in every situation. So why is it not in the, you know, the referee's guidelines that if a player is level and they call for the ball and when their hand goes up, that is the only thing offside, but actually all their body is in line with the, you know, the last defender, then that shouldn't be considered offside. I mean, they should go through every potential permutation before they carve it in stone as the rules. And even though it's Patrick Bamford, you know, a lot of people would, if that was Grealish or Barkley in that position, you'd be going, what the fuck's going on? He's just put his hand out to call for the ball. You know, he is onside. I did meet Mike Riley on a Zoom call, and I kind of understand why it's in such a flaky situation at the moment, but I'm not going to say any more about that.
We just seem to find ourselves now with football where I'm pretty sure I used to understand the rules. Now I'm not confident necessarily with all of the rules. And I think if that's the case, as someone who probably, you know, consumes quite a lot of football, what chance does anyone stand? I think when they start messing around with things around like the handball rule, I think we've seen it with offside. It seems to change in season as well, which I've always thought was a bit strange because, you know, the competition's running, it's live, if not domestically, internationally.
There used to be the kind of chauvinistic and condescending viewpoint that women did not know the offside rule. And, you know, this is like, became a cliche. The fact of the matter is nobody knows the offside rule, handball rule. We're all equal now. Equality has come, finally, it's because, in the game.
But the point is, it's actually impossible to explain it. What was in principle a very, very straightforward rule that once you'd learnt it, you can apply the law to the, you know, law of the game. As now, well, it's too many cooks, isn't it? That you only have to see the word FIFA on our match plan, and a cold shudder came across me. just wondering how many watches that this gentleman's inherited and has stacked away in a back room.
He did say there is plenty of evidence that defenders are nowadays forced to assume unnatural positions simply to avoid the risk to see their hand arm accidentally hit by the ball and concede a penalty kick. Yeah, we did talk about this with Mike Riley, and was it the Dyer one, Eric Dyer, where he jumps up back to the ball? He didn't see the ball. He puts his arm up to kind of get that leverage so he could jump.
He headed onto his arm and he's facing the other way. Was that one?
Yeah, exactly. And Mike Riley, he said, yeah, but the arm was in an unnatural position. He said, yeah, but it was natural because you put your arm up to get that leverage to jump. And he couldn't answer that. He just gave some flaky pretend smile and said the only mutterance of an excuse was, well, you know, VAR, like a referee, you know, 5 years in his job, a referee will be a better referee. So that is, you know, the same principle with VAR, you know, after 5 years, it would be better
than it is now.
That's clearly
not true.
It's like, no, it's not, nothing to do with VAR. VAR is VAR, but it's the referees making the decision. These referees have been in their job a long, long time. These rules seem to change all the time. And you're actually wrong there. You've overlooked the fact that you actually need to put your arm up to jump. Anyway, we could go on further about this, but it's just wishy-washy people in power to make these rules. And I don't know what the decision is to, you know, get more of a committee that overlook these things before they're passed that actually includes players and managers. Perhaps that is a way forward if it doesn't happen already.
They just need to disband some of these stupid committees where people are constantly looking at changing the rules. I mean, I think that there needs to be, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, a bit of approach, really, that, you know, VAR is a big thing that we could discuss all day long. And I think that that's a good example of a good idea badly implemented. I think the handball rule, how can that not be clear? If it hits your hand and you've deliberately tried to seek advantage by doing it, that's it.
Yeah. Right. Moving on. First of all, thank you very much to the My Old Man Said patrons, especially the ones that joined us in Match Club for the Arsenal game, which I think is probably one of my favourite Match Clubs because it was such a great performance.
Brilliant turnout for starters.
A good turnout and a lot of laughs as well, a few anecdotes. It's almost like this podcast, but with a lot more people contributing. Thank you very much for joining us in that. And please do, we're going to get some extra podcasts out, by the way, for patrons during this lockdown international break. But to get access to those extra shows and also to join us in Match Club for the next game, which at the moment is Brighton, unless they start to change it, please do go to myomansaid.com and click on the patron link for more information there. Also, thank you very much for the latest people to actually become patrons, Luke Whitehead. And also, thank you very much to Ian Barnhurst and Peder Brieger to signing up as annual My Old Man Said patrons, where you actually get 2 months for free. So if you want to go for the long haul, please do sign up there. It's 15% off. Unfortunately, I spotted Dan Rogers' contributions at this time, so you've missed out.
There's no evidence whatsoever to support that statement.
Well, are these real
Absolutely
people?
Not.
Jack Strapp, is that
nothing
a real person?
Nothing to do with me.
Amanda Mount?
Nope.
As I said, David, this podcast is a team effort. We all chipped in.
Yeah. Mo Lester, whose was that? Jenna Tolles? Have I missed anybody out? Clee Torres?
I thought it was pretty good.
Fernando's sister?
Never seen them on the patrons list before. Because the childish people I have to work with on this, it's just dumbfounding. Right, let's move on to... I've been apprehensive to talk about Villa's 100% away record because we'd only played 2 games. But now we join Spurs, Leicester, Manchester United, and we are now the 4th team with 100% away records.
And we're impenetrable.
And we are the only team has not conceded.
Impenetrable, don't start on the innuendos as well, Chris. Jesus.
We're the only team not to concede an away goal as well, which that's pretty astounding when you consider last season.
Jesus Christ, what's going on?
Look at who we've played. You know, we've gone to Leicester where we got battered last year. We went to Arsenal where we got, you know, we threw the game away against 10 men.
So what's that? That's 7 goals already we conceded in the same fixtures. Wow. Who was the other away game? Fulham.
They normally beat us. Our record there in the Championship was woeful.
Yeah, they would normally put 2 or 3 past us. So we're a good 9 goals, I think, we conceded in the last time we'd been at those grounds. Massive improvement. And the Arsenal game, just it was almost the way it panned out, it was almost built for how we have been playing defensively in terms of our organisation and setup, which I think we kind of lost that against Southampton, Leeds, because we thought, right, you know, we should be forcing the issue here at Villa Park, and we fancy ourselves against these teams, and you know, we've got Barkley in there, and you know, we could probably have them in a straight up firefight, and that's where our midfield kind of got lost in those last 2 games. But here, Arsenal are the favourites. We're just thinking, well, we've beaten them the last 2 times we've played them, and you know, including the friendly, so we just keep it tight, go back to plan A in terms of the defensive makeup, and see how it pans out. But first clue was in the first minute, was it not? When I think John McGinn's goal, even though it was chalked off, just the way he struck it, was basically symbolised our performance for the next 90 minutes.
Well, we have been waiting a long time to see McGinn put his laces through one around the penalty area. We haven't seen him do much of it this season, and the end of last season, really. When it landed to him, he absolutely fucking rifled it, didn't he? Like, no keeper in the world is saving that.
And it'd still be rising now. I mean, the net was the only thing that stopped it going out of orbit. But in terms of the actual decision, now this is kind of an interesting one, because I think you looked, as soon as I saw the replay of that, I thought, yeah, he's not going to give that, because Barkley is interfering with play, so to speak.
There's and a book he is coming.
He is in the eye line of the keeper. But then you'd hear pundits saying, yeah, but there's no way you'd have saved that, so But it's like, yeah, that's not the point though, is it?
I might be in the minority, but I think I would agree it should have been disallowed, because even though there's no chance any keeper in the world is going to save that, at the point that he strikes the ball, the goalkeeper can't see the ball because of Barkley. McGinn could have easily put that in the other corner, which maybe the keeper would have saved. So that would be my thinking on it. So if it was at the other end and Arsenal had done that, we would be crying for it to be called off. So
yeah, I think we would say he's in the eye line, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy now, when you've come away with a 3-0 win, to go, yeah, that was, you know, fine, we'll take that one, it was the right decision. It's a real shame. It's more of a frustrating one, because I think most people see it and go, yeah, it's probably the right decision, even though it's just an annoying one more than anything.
I mean, I think it's a split moment where you think, well, Barkley could have made out he's more getting out of the way, if you know what I mean. He could have like run to his left a bit
or
more
dived
convincingly.
Out
Or dived out of the way, yeah. That was the only way I could see that being allowed. If
either way, he was offside though, wasn't he?
Yeah. Moments like that, there's two ways you can go. You can actually take that on board as a, right, this is a sign of intent. This is what we're going to be doing the rest of this game. Or you can go, oh, fuck, we're unlucky, and then just fold. Just say, oh, it's not going to be our day today, is it? But Villa didn't think about anything negatively. They basically bossed that whole game pretty much. Interestingly, at halftime, the statistics showed that we hadn't actually had a shot on target, yet we'd actually scored two goals. I mean, one of them disallowed and then the other one given as an OG. But the first goal was hilarious, was it not?
It's a brilliant move. I mean, it almost happened in slow-mo, didn't it, at times? It was kind of strange. We kept the ball brilliantly sort of in their corner, but, you know, the interplay between sort of Barkley, Grealish and Target, who, you know, hats off to the guy. We haven't seen a lot of him going forward this season at times, but when it came down to it, he actually got into position, delivered a great ball, and, you know, we're deserving of the break, because I think if it doesn't come off Saka and go in, Trezeguet scores anyway.
But I'm referring more to Barkley and Grealish pissing around.
Yeah, well, they slowed the game down, didn't they? It went like half speed for a minute, and then...
Just as I was thinking, what are you doing?
You've lost all your momentum now.
You've lost all your momentum. They're all set up. You know, what are you doing? Barkley, what are you doing over there shadowing him? You should be like a bit more central, giving more of an option. That's when Target was that extra. He basically created the opening with that run he did that Barkley spotted.
Yeah.
And away it went.
What I didn't understand about that goal was, watching it play out, you could absolutely read what Barkley and Grealish were doing. And I'm not saying it wasn't a wonderfully well-worked move in the end.
Yeah.
It was quite how bad the Arsenal defending was, as bad as you will see. And the most surprised person in the world is Target, who for a large part of it is a spectator and suddenly finds himself in acres of space. And it's a fine cross across the front of the goal and ultimately proves to be an own goal. But the pace at which there must be a 15-second interlude where the ball can't move more than 6 or 7 yards between Grealish and Barkley, backwards and forwards, back heeling and Harlem Globetrotters.
It's a great thing to watch back, as in the replays now, because at the time you're thinking, what are they doing? But now it's just like, you know, they're taking the piss, basically.
Yeah, I think someone described it as foreplay on Twitter, which I quite enjoy.
Well, traditionally, traditionally, it's the kind of goal Arsenal would have scored against you under Wenger.
Yeah.
Yes. Thanks for reminding us, Chris.
Thanks for that, Chris.
And the weird thing about it was that he was busy shaving himself.
Manscaping.
You keep that to yourself. It's a family show, this.
Fuck.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But the second, that first half was weird, because Arsenal had two great chances after we scored as well. That was the one where... There's the cutback and Martinez manages just to get a hand and it lifts it over Lacazette's head. And then a few minutes later, he obviously powers that header over the bar. But
I think that was the 40th minute, wasn't it? Mm. When Lacazette should have put it,
he should have buried
that one away. I mean, he scores that you know, going into half-time at 1-1, it's a different game, I think.
But it was another game this season, that first half at least, where you thought, we're absolutely in this.
Yeah, Arsenal were there for the taking, weren't they? You could see that. You could see they had a threat. But every time we got in their final third, you thought, we can hurt them here. Just go for it.
But the point is here, it's like it's not, when you say Arsenal are there for the taking, a lot of it isn't that where, oh, it's Arsenal playing bad. You know, they're missing players. We can take them here. It's more how potent we've become.
Yeah.
And you're thinking we can beat these just because of who we are as opposed to what they're doing.
And this is why it's so uncomfortable now as a Villa fan. You don't want to commit in game to that statement, do you? No. You find yourself sitting there in isolation going, is everyone else seeing this?
Does anybody else think we can run these through? I'm not going to say anything.
And that's how it panned out, because I think, I mean, Arsenal must have had a bit of a bollocking, and they made a change at half-time. Didn't really look... I mean, they rolled on a very expensive striker as well, young striker.
Yeah.
Can't say I was particularly impressed with him at all.
It almost like it didn't matter who they were bringing on. As I said, it was more all about what we can do now. Like, bring Henry out of retirement. We'll still destroy it. And Bergkamp as well. Throw him on as well.
Yeah, bring on Petit, Mr. Small.
Bring back Gunnosaurus.
Just don't bring back Vieira. Don't bring back him.
No,
don't bring any leaders back.
Yeah, exactly. But the players still don't know what they've got. I think they're starting to think they might have something here. But, you know, when you're in that position against Arsenal, you're 1-0 up, it's looking all right. You've played them twice recently, as I mentioned, beating them. And you've also tonked Liverpool 7-2. You're starting to think, we'll beat these.
Don't you think we've done subtle things? And it showed as the game went on, I thought, that we had... glaring deficiencies in our squad last season, you know, compounded by some injuries and some tactical issues. But we've massively improved the goalkeeper. The right back, the improvement at right back is like night and day. And Douglas Luiz is becoming... But Barkley, the thing about Barkley is that I think if you overlook the fact that he's not going to track back deep, I think you've got a player who's technically has the potential to be as good as Grealish. But offers us, he's almost playing as an additional striker at times.
Well, some would say he's better than Grealish in terms of what he's done in the game already.
Certain things he is. I would agree with that. But I think that with them together, they are potent.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not who's the best, blah, blah, blah. It's like Grealish suddenly becomes more of a player because he's got somebody to scheme with. And you can see he's almost like playing with a smile on his face. He's enjoying playing with Barkley and vice versa. And this is the thing, there's so much more dimension what we can potentially do. And, you know, we got two of the best players in England in our midfield, and we can terrorise anybody. I mean, Ollie Watkins said it after the game. He said, we can beat anybody now.
Well, that's a great mental place to be in. And I think it
we're going to win the league. We're going to win the league.
it's a ridiculous thing, but you see it bleeds into other players. That you look at a player like Trezeguet, who is vastly improved, but I think having better players around you to do some of the legwork and be just, you know, not put you under so much pressure allows you to focus on doing on the things that are, you know, that you're good at. I am intrigued to see what happens. I mean, we spoke, I think, before off air about, you know, where would we be had we not lost to Leeds and Southampton, even if we'd have just drawn those games? And you look into games like the Arsenal game and you say, do you know what, if we can hold this, I mean, injuries could be our undoing, don't get me wrong, but if we could hold this core group of players together and potentially add to it in January, I think this could be a very interesting season.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple of themes we had in Match Club after the game when we were talking about it was, when you compare what we've done in similar games last season to what we've done here. I mean, for example, we had a great, one of our best performances for a long time was against Liverpool at Villa Park, and then where we got robbed in the last minutes. But we kind of saw that coming. All our effort and endeavour, we did it without Grealish. And if all we needed to do was put a set, and we had a good chance, put our second goal away, and we could have got something from that game. Likewise, against Arsenal, in the same fixture last season, when we were 1-0 up at half time against 10 men, we didn't take our chances. We should have won that game. We got back on top when they equalized. We went 2-1, then managed to lose that game against 10 men, but we had chances. Now we've upped the ante in terms of who we've got in our team quality wise, and we take those chances and we're stronger defensively. So those games where we were, let's say, game and, you know, even the first game against Spurs, the opener, where we were 1-0 up and looking good, but you just knew they were going to wind, you know, wear us down. We can finish the job now. And that's the big, you know, that's the big difference. It's not just effort now, there's end result.
Well, you're seeing the belief and the confidence coming through that when Arsenal had their very brief 5 or 10 minute spell of just starting to get up ahead of steam, we held our shape, stuck to the plan, kind of weathered it a little bit, although ultimately Martinez didn't have much to do, and then kept, you know, I think we'd already had sort of 2 or 3 good chances in the second half and stuck to the plan knowing that we're going to get more chances. And then when it came, finally, you know, Watkins was in the right place at the right time and it's, you know, a really good goal. And then a couple of minutes later, we go and get the third and kill the game with a brilliant, you know, back to front counter-attacking goal. That's probably the pick of the batch.
Yeah. Arsenal only had 2 shots on target, which was a theme of the end of last season with our improved defensive organisation.
Yeah.
Teams could hardly lay a glove on us in terms
of
proper shots.
Don't forget, one of those was the, one of the assists was provided by John McGinn in the first half, the pack pass.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, it wasn't like they were creating. Yeah,
ironically, most of Arsenal's best moments came from Villa actually just losing their intensity or making silly individual errors.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoke about Trezeguet before. There was a moment in the second half where Trezeguet blocked a shot and he's poleaxed by it, lying on the ground. And then you just seen him. And if you've seen the water boy, Adam Sandler, he just seemed to get up and then just charge like an American football linebacker and just took out one of the Arsenal players. I mean, he covered about 30 yards.
I did
yards.
Enjoy that.
Yeah, it was great. And it's just, it's that attitude. And you see, Trezeguet's really, he's at home now. We all know what he's like at the back post. I mean, he's had he pressured the Arsenal defender for the first goal. He had a shot himself.
Was he a threat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the Egyptian Anwar Al-Ghazi.
How dare you insult our favourite son.
Yes.
But in terms of like possession, I think Arsenal had, I think it was 64% at half-time. And you're thinking, that's not what I'm watching here.
But they're a team, you see the way they play, you can hold them at arm's length quite easily.
Yeah, yeah. And this is not the old Arsenal in terms of that respect. I mean, they finished up with 59, but I think the more telling stat here is, if you look at the corners, they had 3, we had 8. And you know, we had 6 shots on target, 6 shots on target in the second half. They had 2 the whole game.
Arsenal have got one of those very annoying, slightly outdated habits now of a team that wants to play possession football but doesn't really have the personnel to carry or create with any great quality.
Yeah, they lack any kind of dynamism or pace.
Well, it's a lot of teams try to copy Barcelona, the sort of Man City way, but unless you've got, there was a lot of passing across the back line for Arsenal, particularly in the first half, where you thought, you can do this all night. You know, I was quite happy. If you'd have said to me, take a draw before today, I'd have been quite happy with that. But I think that was where you got a whiff that actually these guys haven't, is this it? You know, there was a bit of that about it. I don't look at Arsenal and, you know, there was a lot made of their win against Manchester United.
Against the poor Man U team, let's be honest.
Against the Man United, yeah, exactly.
Away from home, they're one of our fellow 100%ers away from home.
And it was a bit of a surprise looking at Arsenal.
I mean, you've got to also mention Mings and Konsa. I mean, Konsa had a couple of great moments in that game, and Mings was pretty commanding as well. So I think it was one of their better performances as a partnership.
The defensive unit in general, you know, the back four and the keeper all have generally played well, bar, you know, sort of 55, 60 minutes against Southampton and probably half an hour against Leeds.
And that's normally when our midfield's been ripped apart.
Yep, absolutely. It's just that's when our overall shape has been taken apart. And you're going to get games where that happens. I don't think anybody's naive enough to think that it won't happen again. But we are definitely improving and we pack a punch. And from a neutral's point of view, we're great to watch because we are entertaining.
Yeah.
Phrases you never thought you'd hear uttered on this podcast. How many years?
Well, you got Ian Wright was on Match of the Day saying Villa looked like John Travolta walking down the street in Saturday Night Fever. There's a strut to Villa, isn't there, at the moment?
As long as it's not John Travolta walking into Scientology headquarters, that's fine.
We used to look like John Travolta in recent years. I actually interviewed John Travolta once, and first of all, you're amazed at you'd heard about this hair plugging thing, which you know, people with a lot of money would have hair plugs put in because, you know, he's John Travolta. He used to be Saturday Night Fever, Grease, etc. He can't possibly go bald, but yes, he did go bald. But he had these hair plugs in, and I remember interviewing him. Most of the time, you're just staring at his forehead going, wow, this is hair plugs, is it? And it's like so obvious. But then the funniest thing was when he walked in, he had his assistant behind him. And he goes, hey, guys, how you doing? Yeah, how you doing? I said, yeah, all right. And I said, probably had a better day than you have by the sound of it. And he's, the PR in the background's like a shock of horror on her face. Because somebody tipped me off that his luggage didn't come. This was in Venice. His luggage didn't come. And it quickly became apparent that nobody had told him. When I said, I said, yeah, I've had a better day than you. And he looked, you know, from his big kind of fake smile to like not smiling. Like, and I said, yeah, I heard about your luggage being lost on the plane. And I think he flies his own planes because he's got a license to like fly
Boeing 747s.
Yeah, it's massive, isn't it? The plane he's got.
He's looking at me like in bewilderment, trying to laugh it off. And his PR assistant in the background is doing the old across the neck where you're trying, you know, saying just shut that down, don't stop talking.
Pretty careless not to load your own baggage into your own plane, isn't it? I think he plays all the parts.
So he didn't have his DJ, but we're no longer that John Travolta. We're the John Travolta of the 70s.
Mm, we're Nicolas Cage, face off. We've just got John Travolta's skin on.
Let's move on from John Travolta. Ollie Watkins, I think we mentioned it against Southampton. It was kind of important that he took that penalty just to give him that...
A little bit of a kickstart.
And yeah, just to show that his goal scoring is still ticking along. A sign of a good striker is if you get beat, if your main striker scores and he's adding to his tally, at least his confidence is going up and, you know, he's still game for the next game. So now Ollie Watkins has scored 6 goals in 7 games for Villa in the Premier League this season. Only Dean Saunders, 7, and Dion Dublin, who scored 9. I think he should have scored about 20 goals in the first 7 appearances. He should have had how many hat-tricks did he?
He should have had 3 hat-tricks on the bounce, shouldn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, those two players, they're the only players who have netted more in, Dean Saunders is the same, but the first 7 appearances for Villa in the Premier League. Meanwhile, Jack Grealish is now getting the proper stats. None of this chances created for a team that just escape relegation where you go, well, you know, watch Villa every game. I don't remember all these chances. But now they're top tier stats. I think he's been involved in, I think only Harry Kane and Son have been involved in more Premier League goals this season. He's bagged 4 goals and 5 assists. I think Harry Kane's on 15 combination of goals and assists and Son's on 10. So that is headline stats. And of course, you know, when you've got stats like that, that means Villa are doing well as well. It's not these second tier stats that don't actually mean anything to your team's position. They're making a difference and putting Villa where they are in terms of picking up 3 points.
I mean, he was very good in the first half. Second half, it was probably as good a 45 minutes you'd have seen from him this season. Yeah. He was all the stuff that the Villa fans have seen that he can do, especially when you know his ball carrying ability. He just drove us up the pitch. You saw that for the goals, the dynamism he gave us, and a little bit of defensive work as well. A little bit of trickery. He had all the things in his arsenal. All went for him. I think the only thing he lacked was probably the goal, which, you know, but everything we did that was good went through him and Barkley, and then they bounced off McGinn really well.
Kind of making it look so easy and also just terrifying Arsenal at the same time.
Well, he's exactly the player Arsenal needed.
Yeah. There you go, Arteta. You know what to do in January. If you could afford him.
What stood out for me about Grealish was the pace that he has whenever he's carrying the ball. I mean, he ran Bellerin ragged, and Bellerin's one of the quickest fullbacks in the league. I mean, it wasn't even skill to beat him. It was just he just took the long way around him because he knew he had the beating of him in pace.
And strength as well. Like if it's 50-50, he shrugs them off, no problem.
And that's one thing I'll say, just going back to... just quickly back to Watkins, was Watkins really led the line well in the first half, and he deserved his chances and took them in the second. Because that's what we'd said in the last few games, sort of Leicester, Leeds, Southampton, that it wasn't like he'd been wasting chances. He just hadn't been getting them. He earned the right first half. He was putting himself about. He was chasing everything. He was a real outlet. Really bullied the Arsenal back four. Which, while you give him credit, I would also say Arsenal's back four was soft. But then he earned the right that when he actually got in front of goal, he buried both of his chances superbly. Especially the third one's a great goal.
Bottom line is, he is a proper finisher, is he not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. That's all I was about to say to wrap up on Watkins was that he's still doing a difficult lone striker role, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't so long ago. I think you could, you know, even there's been significant quality added behind him. You know, obviously he's come in and with some pedigree for goal scoring. I don't think if you dropped a Samatta there, you'd see the same thing. You know, some of the hold-up play was very, very good as well, which was one thing I wanted to mention. He's got this ability where the ball can stick and he can get a pass off. I think keeping fit and very, very promising. Yeah. I like.
Yeah, we had combinations all over the field, and that's where it's important. Now, we don't have time to literally wax lyrical on every player, but you looked at all the little like pairings of people, like, you know, Jack and Target down the left, for example, or McGinn and Louise working to almost interplay in the middle of the park, Jack and Barkley. Probably the front three or four, all linking off Watkins, the two centre-backs. It's like there were lots of like really strong pairings, little trios, and essentially setting up triangles all over the field that Villa looked, you know, I'd be hard-pressed to say who was my man of the match, to be honest, because although I think Watkins will get the plaudits, as will Jack, I think you go down that team sheet and go, well, they did their jobs superbly.
Yeah. Trio, was that did that used to be a chocolate bar?
That's a double-decker, isn't it?
He may be too young. I don't know. I think it was definitely a trio, and there was some catchy theme tune. But this is going way back in my memory. Closing snippets. Villa have won each of their first three away league games in a season for the first time in their history.
Oh my God.
I put this out on Twitter. I had to put apparently because I didn't quite believe it, even though the BBC, well, it's probably why I didn't believe it because it was the BBC. But but apparently it's true. Also, only Chelsea have won more away league games than Aston Villa at the Emirates Stadium. They've won five times. We've won four, but that's
a bogey team for them.
Yeah, considering the basic feeling about Arsenal is they've thumped us so many times in recent years, the fact that we have had it's a bit like we had a good record at Anfield as well in recent times.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that kind of slips under the radar a little bit, doesn't it? Yeah.
Even Tony Moon.
I was going to say, they're still wondering how Luna scored a world-class goal on their pitch.
And then turned out to be a nobody. It's like when he scored that, you just thought, happy days. We've got like a stylish continental
left-back.
Got
the new Maldini.
Oh, well. But at least he had his moment in the sun. Right, I think it's time now to park our Premier League sixth place. We could have been top. We could have been top.
We've got to save it all for the title run.
Yeah, actually, it's still within our grasp, because if we win our games in hand, we do go top, because Liverpool lost points against Manchester City.
Is it the top now? Is it Leicester?
Still set up? Yeah, we know we can get
it. Knock those crisp munching bastards off.
We've already beaten them once.
Right, anything else to add? I think it's nice, actually. I mean, considering all the crap that's been going on in our daily lives, it's nice to, yet again, have that 2-week break from Villa where we go into that international break on a positive. So at least we can feel positive about that thing that normally is ruining our lives.
Yeah.
At least we've sorted that one out now.
Finally squared that off.
You know, my sort of final point on the Arsenal thing will just be quickly that after the two results, with Leeds and Southampton, I think there was a little bit of there was a chance of maybe the wheels coming off, and it's, you know, to make a statement of, do you know what, we are here to stay, and the way to, you know, to go to Arsenal to win in the manner we've done says to everyone, you know, there might be a bit of a bump in the road, but we are good enough to keep the ship moving in the right direction, and I think that's a really important thing to do just before an international break.
Yeah, as long as we avoid major injuries before January, I think we'll be okay.
David, could you save that clip for our 15-game losing run, please?
Yeah, Dean Smith does have a tendency to go on long losing runs and then redeem himself.
When will it be?
Well, December's always tricky, isn't it? That's
probably after the third lockdown.
Anyway, moving on. It's sorry.
Hello, Brighton.
moving on to our show closer, underrated or overrated? Right, this week, I'm surprised we haven't analysed the achievements of this player a bit earlier, actually. Mr. Darius Vassell, bit of a mercurial talent here, because England talisman, and when he was playing for England, Villa fans would stare at the TV screens, or if they went to the game, stare at what was happening on the pitch. Going, what the hell's going on here? It's like, I mean, when you look back on Sven, most of his career it was all about the money, and he'd managed to con a few few football federations from England to Mexico were cons by having him as their manager. But one thing he did do, he wasn't a manager that just thought, right, well, I'll pick him because he's on form. You know, he's on form. He would just pick players because he fancied them for some reason. And Darius Vassell,
not literally.
Well, yeah.
Like a 16-year-old Theo Walcott.
It's a strong allegation.
Yeah, I was trying to get to the Walcott, but I kind of put my foot in it there. But, you know, Theo Walcott, Vassell, he even took Rooney Young, didn't he? Oh, shit. Oh, dear.
He broke him in, didn't he, to the side here?
But he was a bit of a maverick in his selection. But I think, I mean, Theo Walcott was hype. He shouldn't really be going to a major championships when he hasn't actually kicked a ball. Really,
oh, God, he went after barely any game time, didn't he?
Well, he hadn't played senior football, had he?
No, exactly. So, you know, this is Sven being a maverick. But one of the players that symbolised this maverick attitude was Darius Vassell. I was going to say, why did we buy him? But we didn't buy him.
Yeah, he came up through the youth system. He went to... John Wilmot School, not that far from mine, actually, in St Caulfield. And he would have arrived as a YTS in 96. So he would have, in theory, been signed through the Little era. Went pro in 98 with John Gregory, and then made his debut in the August of that year, coming off the bench against Middlesbrough, which was just after we'd sold Dwight York that week to Man United. And obviously, I think he notoriously scored his first goals in the UEFA Cup. We played Strom's Godset in the first round of the UEFA Cup.
Before we jump on, he had a hell of a record at youth level, didn't he?
Yeah, I think it was 39 goals in a season.
I think it was the record. Did Gabby break his record? Because I remember, you know, a generation of Villa strikers always, when they were the homegrown ones, always came into the team, be it Gabby, be it Vassell, as like somebody who's just broken, you know, the record. And I think that 39 was definitely a record breaker at the time. I don't know if it's been
eclipsed. Yeah, and I think I remember like Darren Byfield as a young player, he was banging goals in, wasn't he, as well? You don't tend to see that as much now with, you know, young lads coming in who've scored, you know, those sort of numbers at youth level.
Yeah. Anyway, do continue.
So he put himself on the map quite early in his Villa career. The first couple of years, he was kind of in and out of the side and generally coming off the bench. But he came off the bench in a UEFA Cup game against Strom's Godset. Villa were actually 2-0 down to these sort of nobodies from Norway. And actually came back to win in the last 10 minutes. Gary Charles pulled one back, and then Vassell scored two in the last minute in front of the Holt End, which is kind of the stuff of, you know, dreams for a young lad from Birmingham who's family are all Villa fans. And then he gradually, through John Gregory, you know, earned his place in the side. Obviously, that season, Villa would have had, they brought in Dublin a bit later on to replace York. They had Collymore and others. So Vassell had to kind of wait his turn a little bit till kind of just after the turn of the millennium, really.
I mean, we'll get onto it later, but one thing from what you've just said there, one thing Vassell could do was make a mark on his debut.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, his England debut was just, I think all the Villa fans' jaws hit the floor, didn't they?
I remember being in a pub just casually, you know, you're talking to people, but you got one eye on the game. Again, it was against Holland. You got one eye on the game, and through that eye, you see Darius Vassell doing an overhead kick against Holland scoring. I just remember saying, fucking hell. and then after the shot, you're just wondering, where the hell did that come from? And, you know, I've never seen that at Villa Park.
Well, he was known as like a rapid player, wasn't he? He was quick and...
But he wasn't. He had a strange demeanour.
Well, he was very quiet and started a softly spoken guy. He didn't come across as an aggressive guy. And then,
because when you say he's quick, he wasn't like Tony Daly, where you get the ball and Tony Daly's bombing, you know, bombing almost in a straight line. It's when he got the ball, he had this real casual dribbling style, which was dumbfounding at some stages, that it was actually effective. But it was because it was unpredictable. And I think that's what drew Sven to him.
Yeah, he was a bit of an unknown entity. Obviously, you know, he earned his stripes quite early on with England under Sven, didn't he? And he managed to go to the 2002 World Cup in Japan and Korea. Then I think he went
to the
Euros.
That's remarkable in itself when you think about it.
Yeah, it is. When you look at the forward options England had at this point with you know, Owen, etc.
In his early games, he was scoring every game, wasn't he? I think he, because he finished with about six in 22, but he scored most of those six in the first six games.
First couple of years, yeah. He famously scored in the game at Stadium of Light, which we mentioned a couple of shows back with Alpi. He scored the goal, secured that 2-0 victory for England, which was quite an important game at the time.
He was one of those strikers who you always thought that Vassan was playing within himself, didn't you? Like you say, you'd be sat in the pub, he'd be doing an overhead kick for England, and everyone would go, wow, it's amazing, you know, that Villa player, and you'd see the stuff in the media, and you'd think, that's not the player I completely recognise who turns out for Villa every week. But also, he did always seem to carry a threat. He seemed like quite an intelligent footballer. But would it be unfair to say he was 6 or 7 out of 10 at best?
No, it's interesting you say that, because that's what you felt. But if he came on as a sub, or if he was still on and the game was still alive, or you needed something, that unpredictability that I mentioned, it's not something you could rely on necessarily.
I remember when he broke through, because he's the same age as Michael Owen. I mean, Michael Owen had his breakthrough in 97 for Liverpool. And when I seen Vassell score those goals against Drumscott, that was just like, we found our Michael Owen. This is it. Here he is. And he was a good player. I mean, obviously he didn't hit the heights of Owen, but when he was playing for Villa and England, he was that sort of something different that we've missed for ages. I mean, it's what we missed maybe last season, Villa as well. Just something different that makes the opposition think. And he certainly did that when he came on with pace.
Yeah. I always thought it was a foil for another player. You know, he always used to play with Dion Dublin. Of course, you had the big man, little man combination, the tall guy who could dominate in the air. And then he'd run in behind. And then he would have played with Pablo Angel, didn't he, the first year that O'Leary arrived. And he was a really good foil for Angel that year. Although he didn't score the goals that Angel did, Vassell was one of those guys who had to do a lot of the hard yards and running in behind. And he'd always tended to drift out wide, which meant he didn't have that kind of fox in the box type attitude towards being a striker.
I think his best season was the one the season that the World Cup was in, where he scored 12 goals in 36 games. That was the thing. He was somebody who could score, but he wasn't like Ollie Watkins is today, where he's your main man in terms of scoring, and you expect Ollie Watkins to, let's say, beat 12 goals. And that was the thing about Vassell. When I was, I knew that he'd scored almost 40 goals in one season in youth team, but he didn't look like that kind of player. He didn't look like that fox in the box predatory guy, because as you said, he did drift out wide, and he was a player that would dribble, and he wasn't like appearing on the edge of the 6-yard box or whatever to tap something in. But after he scored 12 goals, I mean, he was still playing mid 30s in terms of appearances, but he was getting, I think some of those, it's a mixture of substitute appearances, but he failed to break double figures in the next two seasons.
And that was so typical of Villa at the time, wasn't it, that we were on the decline with no money under O'Leary. And he ends with his Villa career with a less than 1 in 4 strike rate, which about sums him up, really. He'd score a goal, you think, yeah, he's okay. And then you'd have 2 or 3, even 4 games after that where nothing would happen.
But it was really his England career that got him the move to Manchester City, really.
It's a strange move that was, don't you think? Because this was not when Man City were any good.
Another one where O'Leary sort of hung a player out to dry. O'Leary thought he'd gone stale at Villa, and he'd been at Villa too long, and he just didn't fancy him anymore.
Yeah, he scored 3 goals in his first 5 appearances for England. That was a strange move, because to us, he was like a spent force. And in context of his England career, he was kind of winding up. I think he's the last time he scored for England, I think he scored 2 goals against Iceland. That was June 2004. And his last season at Villa was 2004-2005 season. So he'd probably, shot his load in terms of being an England player.
Well, he missed the penalty, didn't he? He missed that one in the shootout in the quarterfinal against Portugal. And I'd imagine that must have damaged his confidence. And then the following season, as Dan mentioned, that O'Leary era, after O'Leary had that one good first year, but then after that, it got sour pretty quickly. And that was such a forgettable era for Villa when Doug Ellis was trying to sell the club. There was no money coming in.
Yeah.
you know, and you know, Vassell's form sort of went the way of the club, the club's fortunes on and off the field, really.
I mean, Villa players always used to miss penalties on international duty in that period of time. I think Melberg missed one. I think I mentioned it before, recent podcast, against, I think it was Holland in the same tournament there. But yeah,
of course, they interfered with one.
Just a little bit.
But yeah, no, for Manchester City, you know, he failed to get double figures again. I mean, the first season he arrived there, he scored 8 goals in the Premier League in 36 games or 36 appearances.
An interesting actually bit of trivia on him I did see was that in the 46 games he scored across his Premier League career, in the games when he scored, he never actually lost. Yeah. So it was quite a good omen that if Vassell scores, you aren't losing.
It's funny you should mention that, because he was a man of good omens, though, wasn't he? And when I was reading about him, he, you know, later in his career, after he left Man City, he moved to Turkey, didn't he, to play for Ankara Gucu? I don't know if that's the Ankara base side anyway. He
was greeted like a legend. Wasn't
thousands of, I think, 3,000 people turn up to greet him.
And one unfortunate animal.
There's definitely one unfortunate animal. A bear. I mean, he recounts basically a home game later on in the season where it's already going tits up, and he's realised there's all manner of things that are wrong at this football club. But they travelled to the ground on the team coach and stopped outside the stadium for a goat to be sacrificed before the game for the team. Just the staff and players were stood around, and he recounts how I felt like the goat looked at me just before. it was that point in time when I realised that I was most definitely an animal lover. thereafter, before playing the game, most of the players smeared the blood of the goat on their boots and head for good luck. So he didn't take part in it. And then he just says that they had no idea my family back home in Jamaica would find this quite normal too. I changed my iPod album from Tupac to Bob Marley and got myself ready. Everyone else is smeared in blood and he's listening to Bob Marley. Happy days. It was a good move.
Yeah, I never read his biography, but
no one has.
He had a blog. But he had a blog where he would keep like a diary on his time in Turkey. I remember it being quite funny, some of it. But you'll have to catch me on a day where I've actually Googled it and reread it, because I can't remember anything at this present time. Anyway, let's. Where is he now? What happened?
Well, he ended up going. He's been working in youth football recently. He's at the Wolves Academy.
That's right. Yeah.
Currently, and he also featured in Harry's Heroes, where, you know, all the ex-England players get together and play for Harry.
That was it. The Road to Persia. That was his biography. The name of his daughter. That's nice. His biography was all about how he got to his daughter.
Oh, nice. He's a deep thinker.
Tell me more, Phil Shaw. There's something that's missing here that's nagging me. Is he a deep thinker or is he not?
No, I'm just thinking if he had such concern for that poor goat, then he had empathy for the animal. But I'll kick it off and I'm going to say he was overrated. He obviously didn't have the killer instinct if he cared so much for that goat.
Phil, I must jump in because later on in the same passage when he's reflecting on what he most enjoyed about, so having just been, I don't know what the word would be, so off put by the demise of the goat, he then reflects on his great experiences in the country. I quote, like mouth-watering kebabs. Not goat such a deep kebabs. Thinker. The prosecution rests.
No, but you could just imagine like Zlatan or somebody, he'd be like, fuck the goat. He wouldn't care.
Zlatan would say, who's the real goat?
Anyway, let's cut to the chase. Underrated or overrated?
Overrated.
Oh,
I'm agreeing. Overrated as well.
Yeah, I think it was... maybe never fulfilled his potential, so a bit overrated, yeah.
Yeah, I think ultimately, from a Villa point of view, he ultimately came up short. I think exceeded all kinds of expectations in terms of being an international player, because he scored an overhead kick at the Johan Cruyff Arena, which not many players have done. If you looked at his England career, you'd say underrated, but just because who knew that would happen? He's to be your neighbour, didn't he?
He used to live just down the road. Yeah, I used to see him most mornings driving up the road in his Porsche.
Did he ever give you a lift to school or whatever you were doing?
No, he didn't
time?
Actually, the cheeky fucker.
All right, anyway, I think I'll go overrated ultimately, because we're looking at this through a Villa context. So overrated for me as well. Right, thank you very much for listening and joining us for the show as we march on into an international break. Feels good. I think we're one of the contenders this season in terms of all kinds of things, like
we're in the mix.
Are we one of the big six yet? Are we big six now? Super Sunday, big six.
Are we going to Europe as well, Super League?
We are part of the big six.
Yeah, fucking we're going.
We founded everything else, didn't we? We founded the Football League, founded the Premier League. I might as well do the European one and go the whole hog.
And we've just heard, I mean, whatever's happening lockdown-wise, no fans in the ground. If we can bag a Europa League qualifying match against... Who's the team dishing out those tickets?
Linfield.
Linfield, yeah. If we can bag a Europa League game against Linfield, there's a good chance we've got a contact here where we can get some free tickets. But that probably our best bet watching Villa in a stadium is for Villa to qualify for the Europa League at least and then get a draw against an Irish team or some other team in Europe that actually is allowing Belarus or somewhere there where they're allowing fans to filter in. I was going to say another country where there's no legal system. Anyway, right then, thank you very much again for joining us, and please do subscribe to the show. We'll probably churn out a few extras during the international break, and as we continue our march into European qualification, fingers crossed. It's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.